Tommy Lorenzo.
And this is the Pop Style Opinion Fest. Hello, kittens. Welcome back to another edition of the PSO. I am the T in your Tilo, Tom Fitzgerald, and I'm here with the Low in your Tilo, Lorenzo Marquez, my lovely husband.
Hello.
And there are many cats milling about,
yes,
ready to make lots of noise. Mm-hmm. No matter what we do, they all congregate around us as soon as the mics get flipped on.
They knew.
We could put out catnip, we can put out comfy pillows, we can put out food, we could put out fresh water. It will not matter. As soon as those mics get flipped on, they're like, oh, we're here. Let's go.
The thing that they know exactly what we do all day, and they're with us all the time. They're very attached to us because we're home all day. So they don't understand time off. Like, all right, now you have to go away.
They just
don't understand.
Recording the podcast requires setting stuff up. So there's this whole thing where we set up for the podcast. And if you have cats, you know what it's like. The minute you start doing something that is not expected, they all sit down and watch and take it all in. Something new. It's something new, something different.
Anyway,
you've rearranged the furniture, you know, whatever. So then it becomes an event every Friday like this. Oh, it's time. It's time. And they get all excited. And we're lucky that Daisy and Tab are very quiet cats for the most part.
But say her name.
I'm not even going to say her name, but because if I say her name, she'll respond. Long-time listeners know which one of our cats is the real troublemaker here, and she is literally milling about our feet, just waiting.
Like,
and that's the
shark.
Other thing. If she doesn't get the kind of attention or acknowledgement, her meowing
gets louder.
She starts getting into a fight. She'll fight with one of the cats. And we've got like big screens surrounding us, folding screens to block out noise and everything. And last week she almost knocked the screen down in the middle of the podcast. Yeah. So anyway, trials and tribulations of living with cats while trying
babies
to be fabulous podcast artists such as ourselves. Yeah. Anyway, it's another Podpourri this week. Podcast potpourri, as we touch on a bunch of different topics that happened on the zeitgeist this week. Let's start with something super frivolous. The Kardashians.
Oh,
Keeping Up with the Kardashians was announced this week that after, 24 seasons?
I believe. I mean, 24 or
something
like that.
Some ridiculous number of seasons, because they have like two seasons a year or whatever. After 20-some-odd seasons, the show was going off the air. The Kardashians themselves, the Kardashian family themselves, made this decision to go off the air. And the press being the press, oh my God, what does this mean? No more Kardashian.
Oh, come on. Seriously.
But, you know, the press being the press, it's very performative, let's say. I tend to be a little, I don't know. We've been doing this a long time, and we're very lucky that what we do as pop culture commenters and fashion commenters and critics and such, we're able to do without answering to a boss. We set things up so that we don't have to answer to anybody but ourselves, and we have to, you know, meet a certain number every month in order to pay our bills, but we're not beholden to certain editorial ideas.
Right.
And when it comes to pop culture, when it comes to commenting on pop culture, there is this sort of blind, willful blindness in order to get a piece out. So, oh my God, what does it mean that the Kardashians, Keeping Up with the Kardashians? And it was all very performative, because anybody who writes about these people in particular, or pop culture generally, knows that this show going off the air will mean nothing to the Kardashians in terms of their influence on the culture, in terms of their visibility, their daily visibility in the culture. I'm going to turn over to you, because I don't want to turn this whole conversation into my rant. Go.
Rant. The thing is that they said that they're going to end Keeping Up with the Kardashians. I mean, these people know how to write things. That's what they said. That doesn't mean they're not going to, you know, come up with another idea, another show or whatever. I mean, these people seek attention on a daily basis. So,
and they're very, very good at it.
Right. They're not just going to say, oh, okay, we're done here, and we're just going to count our money now. No, that's not going to happen. Something else is going to be announced, and they're going to keep going until people get finally bored with them. It's been a long time and they're still going.
I don't know if they mentioned if all of the spinoff shows are all going to be canceled as well. Like,
no,
this,
I don't think they will,
but
said anything yet.
Even if the spinoff shows are also going away, my point is that it doesn't matter if they're on TV at all anymore. Two of them, Kim and Kylie, are just south of becoming self-made billionaires. They are both somewhere in the range of $900 million. That's what right. they're worth. And Kendall, Kylie, all of them actually, but I know Kim has like 1.8 million followers on Instagram. I think Kylie has 2 million or slightly more than that. The reach that they have on social media is so massive that it doesn't matter whether they're on TV. If anything, TV is a tiny audience compared to the audience that they themselves have generated. And you know, I just got finished saying that we have set things up so that we don't have to answer to a boss. We have created our own brand. So on a very tiny level, we are doing, you know, I can kind of respect that the Kardashians have built this brand out of their own whatever. And it has gone far beyond anything traditional media can do for them. It really, even though I'm sure she will want it for as long as she is a working model, it really doesn't matter if Kendall gets on the cover of Vogue. It doesn't, because she's so popular and has so many followers and makes so much money off of that. It doesn't matter what traditional media offers this family anymore.
Right. I think they're very savvy. They know exactly what they're doing. I don't think they're not going anywhere, and they're going to still make money, because it's fascinating to me how someone just becomes famous out of nowhere, and then all of a sudden is a zillionaire. And it's just interesting to me how people just buy into that. I guess they're fascinated by these people for some reason. Unexplainable to me in a certain way, but they are obsessed with them and they buy whatever they sell. And I think it's very clever for Kylie, for example, to just do makeup, because the thing is that it goes back to, like, if you think about fashion just for a little bit, it's how people buy perfume because they can't afford the brand. They can't afford the you know, the $15,000 dresses. So they buy the perfume because that way they kind of like have something related to that brand, that name, that whatever that represents. So it's the same way with these people. You buy their books or you buy their makeup kits because it's a way to, like, you know, be them, be associated with them. So they're very smart because they get products that you can afford. I mean, like, you can buy a makeup kit and then, you know, millions of people buy that kit and they become zillionaires. So they'll keep doing that. But at the same time, you do need to be popular. You do need to be out there exposed. So if they don't have the show, they're going to have to come up with other things.
I think they already have, though.
I don't know. But, you know, at some point, people get tired. If you're not out there all the time, people forget you.
I just feel that the show itself had very little in the last few years to do with what's making money for them, what's generating attention for them. I don't think that the show itself was probably becoming a drag to them because they had to commit to this shooting schedule for something. Of all the things that they have, all the plates that they have spinning in the air at one time, I'm pretty sure the show makes the least amount of money.
I don't know about that. I would like to see
their makeup lines and their product lines, the amount of money they make for that stuff is off the chain. It is crazy high. I don't think E! Entertainment is paying them that much money to appear on the cable.
I think
on a cable network.
I agree with that, and I think that Instagram, for example, has changed the law of so many people. Because with Instagram, you post pictures and people keep following you, and you know, they keep feeding you that attention. So I guess if you don't have the show, but you're still on Instagram and social media, and you're tweeting and posting pictures and stuff like that, you still have a following. I guess that's how it's going to work. I don't know. But I know these people a little, not just them, but celebrities in general. And these people seek attention. It's going to get to a point where they're going to be bored to be just by their pool all the time, and they want to do something. And they're going
to. You and I have a very different idea of what this means for them.
I think they're going to come up with another. I don't think it's. Yeah.
I don't think anything will. I mean, we'll see. I don't think anything will change or has to change. I don't think they will lack for any attention. I mean, Kim's husband is currently running for president.
Well, I think that's the other thing.
They don't need a television show. It's probably been a drag on their brand for a couple of years. I don't see any sort of change in their influence on the culture or in their visibility. I mean, maybe we won't see. I mean, I was, for a second here, I was like, okay, this is going to be a little mean, but it's the Kardashians. What the hell do I care? Khloe and Kourtney and Kris, they don't have that much going on for them. They all have huge followings, and they all have brands with, you know, deals with brands and stuff like that. So none of them are headed towards the poorhouse. But in terms of the real superstars of the family brand, which is Kim, Kylie, and Kendall, they're all fine. They're all not, they're going to be billionaires, and they're not going to lack for attention. They won.
I don't know. I think their whole shtick is to be very honest about their lives and exposing everything. And I think with what's going on in the country and everything else, it got very ugly for them, their reality. And I don't think they want to expose that. I don't want to think they want to show that on TV. And maybe that's one of the reasons why they canceled the show, because they just don't want what we saw on social media happening on TV for them. I don't know. They are one of the most, I don't know, guarded. They're just very protective of their, you know, or whatever they have.
Their
brand, family, image, everything. They're it's all the very, same very, thing.
Their
very,
brand.
Yeah. So I think that it got a little out of control, I think, for them with everything that happened. And I don't know. Maybe that's one
what
of the
What do you mean
why,
everything that happened? I'm not... I'm...
With Kim's husband, with all that stuff going on. And I don't think they want to have a whole season dedicated to that. Her traveling and crying.
Well,
and
I do think
him.
That... I'll grant you that. I do think Kanye's ongoing issues are part of the could be part of the reason why Kim in particular does not want to do reality television anymore. Although they kept that part of her life for the most part off of the show. But I still like everything that I just don't think there's deeper meaning to this family. I don't think there ever has been. In a way, it's somewhat refreshing in that you can always understand the Kardashians in terms of attention and money. Is it, and every decision they make, it surrounds those two points, attention and money, which in their line of business largely equates to the same thing. Attention equals money. So my first thought upon hearing this, and even after talking it out with you here now, my thought hasn't changed. They made this decision because it wasn't making money for them, and they don't need the attention because they can generate that themselves.
I can see
that's
that too.
The bottom line. Everything they do is for that bottom line. And, you know, there is a weird sort of respect on my part for what they've accomplished out of nothing, basically, out of nothing. They really have built an empire. They really have, at least some of them, have become figures of tremendous influence. People, we get a lot of blowback whenever we feature a Kardashian on or a member of that family on our site. And why are you guys covering this? And I wish you guys wouldn't pay attention to these two and or to these people. And the thing is, our little drop in the water is not going to make any Our little drop in the bucket is not going to make any difference to the amount of attention they receive. If we stopped paying attention to them completely, they would still have 2 million followers. They would still be right on the edge of becoming billionaires. So whenever we feature them, it has no influence on them or on the culture at large or their influence on the culture. But the second thing is the reason we feature them is because they are hugely influential people in the culture. And hate to say it, but they actually have influenced fashion on Kim has especially. That's just the reality of it. So when people say, why are you featuring these people? That's why. They're some of the most famous people in the world. They're incredibly influential. Like, I didn't make those rules, and I would love a world where the Kardashians weren't billionaires, but that's not the world we live in.
Yeah, I personally, I don't give them credit for anything. I don't think I don't think they did.
You don't accidentally become a billionaire.
If you're a celebrity and you have a huge following, yes, you do become a
billionaire. No, you don't. Then there'd be a lot more billionaire celebrities.
No, my point is that they have no talent. They have nothing. They stumble upon something that people became obsessed with their image, and their fights, their family drama, all that. People just became obsessed with that, start following them, and they were smart enough to hire people who could make that into a lot of money for them. That's pretty much it. And they've been milking this cow for years and years and years.
To tremendous, tremendous success.
Yes, if you can call it success, but I don't give him any credit at all.
Okay,
absolutely zero credit I give them. But yes, they are zillionaires, and yes, they surrounded themselves by smart people who made smart decisions for them to make money. And that kept going on for a long time, and they're all zillionaires.
I think you have a slightly outmoded perspective on them, but it's a very, 2010 perspective on the Kardashians, but I'm getting a dirty look.
Okay. All right.
I agree to disagree. I'm not here to defend them from anything. I think they're crass and tacky, and like I said, I wish I lived in a world where they weren't as influential as they are, but I just feel like their record speaks for itself, and if this was an easy thing to do, everybody would be doing it. Everyone would be accomplishing what the Kardashians have accomplished in terms of their influence on the culture, the amount of people who pay attention to them, and the insane amount of money that they have generated over the years.
They are influential in the sense that they have a lot of people following them. So if they say anything, and if you have millions of people following you, you are going to sell whatever you say. People are going to do whatever you're telling them to do. That is just the way it is. But that doesn't mean that I give them any credit for anything. You didn't create anything. You just, I don't know, feeding off something that is part of our culture, celebrity obsession. Anyway.
Okay. It's not that I disagree. I just, I don't disagree.
No,
but
I know.
I'm not mad at them for it, I guess, as this is my perspective. It's like, go ahead and make your money. I don't love what you are, and I don't love the kind of messages that you send out, but you know what? Going back to your earlier reference to everything that's going on in the world, I think that probably does color my perception of them at this point, because it's like, well, yeah, with everything going on in the world, I'm sorry, the Kardashians don't rate very high in terms of my list of problematic. Like, go make your money. You're not the problem.
And they know that because not that I follow them, but I'm on the computer looking for stuff all the time. Every time they post a new product or something they're selling on their social media, people are attacking them. Immediately saying, why are you doing this? The world is falling apart, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, you're selling a T-shirt here, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, it gets to a point where that, you know, they finally understand that, you know, that's not the time for a lot of things. But anyway.
But you know what it is time for? It's time to talk about EveryPlate, which is sponsoring this portion of the podcast.
Now I'm hungry.
Experience full plates and fuller wallets with America's best value meal kit. Get meals you'll enjoy and your bank account will love delivered right to your door. Think of it this way. One meal is the same price as one cup of coffee. EveryPlate dinners are the cheaper alternative to takeout or delivery. Recipes come together in about 30 minutes, definitely faster than a trip to the grocery store and starting a meal from scratch. EveryPlate offers contactless delivery to your doorstep for easy home cooking on a budget. Less time deciding what to cook means more time spent enjoying good food with family. EveryPlate's easy-to-follow recipes and pre-proportioned ingredients take the stress out of dinner time. EveryPlate does the meal planning, shopping, and prepping for you, taking the time-consuming guesswork out of cooking. And you never buy more ingredients than you need because EveryPlate's recipes come with everything already pre-measured. And EveryPlate now offsets 100% of their carbon emissions. It's constantly expanding their shipment zone, so check to make sure your zip code is included where EveryPlate ships at checkout. Let's see. We have prepared several meals using EveryPlate, and I've got nothing but praise for it. It's the easiest thing in the world. I'm a home cook. You've heard me talk about it on the show. I'm the one who does all the cooking on this. Mm-hmm. In this joint around here, and I like to cook, but I also sometimes really don't want to think about it at all, and I really don't want to have to worry if I have the ingredient. Like
right, that's the number one.
And I know people understand this. I know people who are listening understand this. Sometimes you just want someone else to tell you what's for dinner that night.
It's true,
and you just have to follow 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 instructions, and then it's done. Instead of trying to figure, I know this isn't the most pressing problem in your life. But it does take away that stress knowing, oh, we're going to have every plate for dinner tonight.
Not only that.
It's all laid out on a card.
Having
it's
all the ingredients.
It's all pre-measured for right. me. And I just don't have to think. I just have to do what I'm told. And at the end, I get a great meal.
It's true. Like a restaurant quality type of meal.
It's a restaurant. Yeah, it's restaurant quality meals. You can stretch your repertoire a little in terms of what the types of ingredients that you use or the types of foods that you cook. So it's just a win-win all around for us. It's been a great thing for us to have, especially during these uncertain times, when grocery shopping is stressful and your day is stressful. Right. And why not look for one thing that's going to take the stress out of your
and
day?
And you do save money because you get exactly what you need, as opposed to you looking at a recipe and having to have all those ingredients. And sometimes you go buy them, you have to buy large portions of everything. You know, when you just need sometimes one thing, one tiny little.
And I haven't used the word delicious yet, but yes, everything is delicious. Yes. Every single meal has been fantastic, has been delicious, freshest ingredients, high quality ingredients.
Agreed.
Totally Tilo thumbs up on every plate. So get 3 weeks of every plate meals for only $2.99 per meal. $2.99 per meal. Come on now, by going to everyplate.com and entering code TLO3. That's EVERYPLATE.com and enter code TLO3 to get 3 weeks of Every Plate meals for only $2.99 per meal. Everyplate.com, TLO3. Thank you, Every Plate. TLO recommended. Okay.
So,
are we done talking about the Kardashians and
yes,
disagreeing strenuously?
The thing with me, and you know this about me, I hate people who make money, lots of money, with no talent or with no hard work at all. That's my thing, and I will stop right here.
That's just, and for me, I'm like, okay, I'm not defending those people, but that is the way of the world
in
the entire history of civilization.
But I don't have to support
and
that.
It's not worth getting angry over.
Yes, all right.
Worth getting angry over this week are gender reveal parties.
Oh my God. Listen.
They're the dumbest goddamn things. I don't care if you had one. The reason this came up is because the California wildfires are being partially attributed to a gender reveal party. And this is not the first time a gender reveal party has set off millions of dollars worth of property damage, because it happened at like 3 years ago, I believe, in Arizona.
Yeah.
I don't know. We're two gay, childless gay men, so... On the other hand, I was going to say, why would you want to listen to what we have to say about gender reveal parties, since it's such a cis heteronormative kind of thing to do? On the other hand, as gay men, as queer folk, I got to say, I have always felt that gender reveal parties were a nervous response to the fact that we are in a time where the gender binary has been broadly and widely questioned, where we are dealing with the existence and listening to the experiences of people who are either trans or not on the binary at all, non-binary people. And if you're, say, a young parent-to-be, I'm not saying that this is why every parent has one. I'm talking about, like, on a cultural level, the rise of gender reveal parties, coupled with the fact that they are sometimes explosive, like the actual reveal itself is so explosive in tone, like fireworks get set off or flames shoot out or things literally get blown up in order to assert the gender binary, in order to stand there as cishet people and say, yes, it's all the same. Boys are still boys and girls are still girls. Blue means boy, pink means girl. Everything is exactly the same. The world is not changing. And that, in my opinion, as a queer person, that's what I see when I see these things. I don't mean like little gender reveal parties like you cut into a cake and pink fucking M&Ms come out or whatever. I think that stuff is stupid as well, but at least it's not violently stupid. And again, I know that we have a lot of cisgenders and heterosexual people listening to, in fact, the majority of people who listen to this probably are. And maybe many of you have even had or been to gender reveal parties. I have never been to one. And to be honest, I would not go to one. As a queer person, I find them a little, exactly as I said, they feel like a nervous reaction to the idea that gender might not be as fixed as you think it is.
Right. I tend to refrain myself, I don't know, when it comes to talk about babies and stuff like that, because I don't have a child. I'm not going to have one. So I have zero experience when it comes to that. But I do have a ton of nieces and nephews, and I love all of them. And I understand, based on my experience, the joy they bring to the families when they're born and all that. So I do understand the excitement and the need, or the wanting to celebrate that somehow. So I don't have a problem with people celebrating, even if it's just a gender review kind of thing. I do feel that it is just something that people just copy from other people. I mean, the whole idea was from this woman, I forget her name, right? She posted on her site and all of a sudden became a big thing. Again, social media, you know, people following people and feeling the need to do the exact same thing.
It's also a scam for more presents.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and attention. I mean, it's attention seeking.
Because
yeah,
baby showers weren't enough, so right. We had to have... And I don't know, there is this idea of putting so much weight and focus on the gender of your baby. It just strikes me as freaking weird. It's right. Just, I'm sorry, it is weird from my gay male perspective.
I do feel that I find it interesting because, A, if you go a little deeper, it's a little disturbing because, you know, if you read stuff on, you know, about other countries, how people deal with gender in other countries and so on, many countries are still killing a baby if it's a girl, that type of thing. So it's a little concerning to me and troubling in a way,
right,
to deal with that, to see that happening, that you're celebrating if it's a boy or a girl. And then I feel like we're fighting so hard to give women to give women rides and you know, equality and all that, and then we're stuck again with pink and blue that type of thing.
Not just pink and blue, but an entire explosive event surrounding this idea that pink means girl and blue means boy.
And that you're somehow celebrating that.
Right. When all you're doing is reaffirming traditional gender roles,
yes,
in a way that is probably harmful to the culture at large, but it's definitely harmful to the surrounding environment when you're setting things on. Like, you're setting things on fire based on the gender of your unborn child. Like, what the fuck, people? I'm sorry for my language, but what the fuck is wrong with you? What's wrong with the cishets? What is wrong with you guys?
So, if you want to celebrate...
have a baby shower. I've been to baby showers. Fully support the idea of it. Celebrating a new baby, especially if the parents are new, is exciting and fun. And even in my cranky gay middle age, I completely support the idea of celebrating that. Celebrating the gender of your unborn child is weird. And I will say that in the back of my head, every time I've ever seen any of these videos of gender reveal, and again, I'm not talking about cutting into a cake and pink M&Ms or blue M&Ms come out. I still think that's goofy, but I don't think it's necessarily harmful. That's basically a baby shower with a little surprise attached to it. I'm talking about these like big outdoor events, you know, where things explode or get set on fire or fireworks or whatever to reveal the gender of the baby. And every time I see those obnoxious gender reveals, all I can think is, I really hope that poor kid is not gay or trans. Because if this is how your parents acted before you were even born about your gender, there's no way they're going to deal well with any expression that doesn't conform to that gender.
I do think that
I feel every time, yeah, I'm like, yeah, oh God, I hope that boy isn't a sissy, or I hope that girl isn't kind of dykey, because Jesus, they're going to get so, look at how their parents are acting before they've even taken a breath.
I'm going to get
in so much trouble.
No, I do agree with all that. And I mean, they had a plane crash. I forget when and how, but the plane was supposed to, like, I don't know, shower with a certain color, whatever.
Oh my God, people, it's a baby. Get over it.
And then the plane crashed. That's one. And then we had the 2018 case. What I find disturbing about this case that happened this year, this month, is that you knew it happened before. I mean, at least everybody knew about the first case. Why would you do it again? you know you're doing it and it's going to cost something, but you're going to do it anyway because that's how much attention you need.
Right.
And this case, the second case now in particular, was to take for a photo op. Like, they wanted pictures to put on Instagram.
Right.
So again, and social media and all this attention, it's not going anywhere. It's just going to get worse. And people are going to be doing, crazy things like that so that they can have a cool picture on Instagram that, you know, everyone, family members and friends can like and so on. That's not going to stop. What I find upsetting and annoying is that these people don't think about anything else but themselves. I mean, the fact that, you know, half of the country is burning, not because of you only, but, you know, you contribute to it. And,
right.
You know, because you wanted a goddamn picture. And then what are you going to tell your child? Oh, yeah, we had a little thing blowing up here that ended up, you know, burning down the whole country.
Right.
Yeah.
The whole West Coast caught on fire. But
because of
it's
you.
It's a boy.
Because of you. You were born.
So thank God you have a penis.
Anyway, I find that very disturbing, honestly.
I do too.
But I do think you have the right to celebrate, and I think you should celebrate however you feel like, except that
when it's destructive.
Yes, you should be careful that
and
it doesn't
I do
cause, you know,
think that there is potential
pandemic.
For tremendous emotional destruction if you're celebrating your child's gender to that extent before your child has even been born. Because you're celebrating what you think that child is going to express their gender. And there's, you know, when you see a little dingus penis on your ultrasound or whatever, and you start, you know, shooting blue flames in the air and like, you're basically saying this boy better act like a boy because we are asserting that, or this girl better act all frilly and love her Barbies because we are literally blowing up the desert to celebrate that she, you know, doesn't have a dingus on the ultrasound. I just feel they're gross and weird,
yeah.
And you're violently asserting the gender binary and
literally
extremely traditional gender roles before your child has even had a chance to breathe. Again, and as Lorenzo alluded, as childless gay men, we do try and be careful being critical of parents and parental traditions because we're not raising kids. And believe me, we do respect that. And we understand it's a whole thing. It's a whole life thing. But if you want to listen to us at all on this, listen to us as the perspective as queer people and what it's like as a queer person to see these gender. Because I got to say, I never heard of any queer parents holding one of these. I can't imagine gay parents or queer parents holding one of these explosive gender reveal parties because nobody understands better than queer people that gender roles are socialized and often very destructive. So to celebrate them that way is just, whatever. Live your lives.
Yeah.
And to anyone who's ever had one and who was listening to this, I'm sorry. I don't want to offend you. If it was a happy moment for you, I'm glad. But if your little girl doesn't like dolls or your little boy does, I hope you give them the room to be that way.
Yeah.
Then there she is. She's at my feet.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say her name because if I say it, she'll just get... Oh, see, she'll get louder. Go ahead.
Like I said, if you want to celebrate whatever, you have the right to. Just be careful that doesn't... Whatever you do...
Damage your child's development.
Whatever you're doing is not burning down 8,000 acres.
Also
and,
that.
And making people move their animals and people
right.
out of the way and house burning down.
Try not to cause billions of dollars worth of destruction in your celebration.
That's the only thing. It's like, wow. I mean, come on. That's, you know, if you want to do it at home, whatever. Whatever.
Lorenzo, why don't you talk about this season's very weird fashion week, which is currently kind of sort of going on.
Yeah, well, the thing is that I've been reading the news and, you know, reading up on the whole New York Fashion Week this season. And it's interesting to me because it is happening exactly what we thought it was going to happen. People are just going to do what they've been doing for the past, I don't know, for like last year, which is to do more lookbooks, to do more digital stuff, to produce movies, little films, and you know, short films, I mean, and then things like that, instead of having runway shows. Some people are still doing, I read that Jason Wu is still doing a fashion show, but it's going to be like for 30 people only. And the thing is that listen, we have a lot of experience with Fashion Week. We've been to many seasons in New York. We almost went to Europe for a couple that we got invited, but we decided not to. I regret now. I wish we had. But anyway, we do have a lot of experience, and it's a very exciting experience. But you have to be part of the whole thing to understand how great it is. If you're not there, if you're not part of the fashion industry, you don't quite get it. But it's an emotional, it's a fantastic thing. If you like fashion, it's one of the most wonderful things because you get to see all these wonderful clothes. And
do you think people can't tell you just tried to kill the cat?
Mimi was driving us crazy here. So
he didn't try and kill the cat.
No, I did not. Don't say that because people believe you. You know, fashion is wonderful. You see those beautiful garments coming down the runway. Anyway, my point is it's exciting. You get to meet people. But these rooms used to be, at least, very, very crowded, like to the point that you can't even move. You're sitting right next to everybody, right next to the next person. And it's like thousands of people
in the room.
I've said this
before, but the untold secret of Fashion Week is that, especially the one in September, body odor is an issue because it is all people packed in to these spaces. And, you know, some of them are very dressed up in a lot of finery that they have to wear all day long. You know what I mean? Like they're walking around in Chanel right. tweed jackets and everything. And when you're shoved in these hot, crowded spaces, I don't care how expensive your perfume is, it becomes a bit of an issue.
It gets very, very crowded. It's hard to get in, impossible to get out. It's just crazy. It was at least an exciting thing to do. I miss it, and I'm glad we did it. It's a great experience for me, obsessed with fashion. But I just don't see that happening again anytime soon because there's no way you can social distance. I mean, there's absolutely no way. I mean, Jason Lee is doing this show for like 30 people. I mean, still, 30 people have to be very far from each other. And
right.
So it has to be a huge place. And it's just impossible to do those things without costing an enormous amount of money. And I do appreciate they started doing this with the couture shows. And I do appreciate that fashion, it's becoming more intimate, more creative in the process of like you doing this, you know, making these movies, films, documentaries and lookbooks and videos and things. You're forced to be more creative. You talk more about the creative process. So I don't know. I appreciate them more. I think it's a different way to present fashion. I think it's becomes more relatable, I think, more accessible.
Right.
For everyone in general, because anyone can go on Instagram or to the website and see that thing as opposed to, you know, never be invited to a show. So I think it's a good thing, and I'm excited to see what they're going to produce and what they're going to come up with. But, I mean, some people are still doing shows. It will be very, very... But even if they're doing small shows, I mean, like, for example...
A lot of shows are going to be online, though, right?
Right. But
online
even if
you only.
Do, like, let's say Jason Wu is doing it and he invited 30 people. People from Europe are not going to come for this. You know, fashion editors and people from Europe, international people, are not going to come. So I don't know if it's worth it because, you know, the thing about doing shows is so that people, important people, people that matter... are seeing those clothes so that they can talk about them later. So I don't know if people are going to show up. I mean, maybe some, maybe Anna Wintour will have a separate room just for her.
Right.
And the models will walk in and out. And I'm not kidding. I'm sure that that's going to happen. A room just for her and the models walk in and out. We'll see. The good thing about this, I think, is that you get to see all the stuff up close with videos, with films and lookbooks and things like that.
Right.
So we'll see.
I think it's good that the fashion world is being forced to look at how it does business and how it promotes itself because it needed to have a reckoning for many years now. And I feels like the current situation has forced a reckoning on the industry in terms of how it promotes itself and how overblown that promotion has become.
Right.
In the 21st century, actually, in the last 20 years or so, especially American fashion, it has become, the promotion of it has become so tied to spectacle and celebrity that it's hard not to get the sense that it stopped becoming about clothes and design. A long time ago. And I would love, I know it's very optimistic to say this, but I would love it if the current situation, that being, you know, the worldwide lockdown pandemic issue, forces the industry to look at how it's been doing things and maybe go, I don't want to say go back, but I do look back on the days of like small shows in ateliers and salons. Mm-hmm. And I say this as someone who benefited from getting invited to those much bigger shows.
Right.
It helped put our site on the map when we went professional. It helped us to establish professional relationships with editors and stylists because we met them at these shows. And so I'm very grateful for that. But even I understood as I was benefiting from the privilege of being invited to these shows that roughly 2/3 of the attendees, myself included, probably didn't need to be there. And that in this age of hyper media saturation, where a dress can walk a runway and you can watch it from 10,000 miles away at the same time as it's walking down the runway, there is no need for these ridiculously large, expensive, energy sucking. If you want to talk about sustainability in fashion, I mean, just what did the back of the tents always look like if you ever wandered behind them? It was nothing but trucks with their generators running all day long. These tents would be, circus-sized tents. We're not talking camping tents. And pumped full of air conditioning in September or heating in February. And all I could think was, not all I could think, but I remember thinking, man, this is such a waste.
Imagine now.
The carbon footprint is just horrible. And the money involved, it actually got to sort of grotesque levels. And I did say this when Lagerfeld died, that I thought with his death it was going to be the end of those kinds of shows, those ridiculous like train station.
I know his shows.
And I mean, I'm making fun of American, but I mean, it's not like European fashion everywhere didn't have the same issues. Lagerfeld was a perfect example of that. He really took fashion shows and turned them into these massive international spectacles. And I won't deny that some of his shows were gorgeous in the day.
They're gorgeous, but like
wasteful
if you were front row at a Lagerfeld Chanel show, for example, you couldn't see the clothes.
No.
Because they would walk so far away from
it. It was so far away.
We've attended any kind of show you can imagine.
Best are always the intimate ones,
but
right?
My favorite were always the presentation ones, because presentation is when the models are standing or sitting or lying down on a bed or whatever. Just there. And you walk around and you can get close to them. You can see the clothes very, up close. Those are my favorite shows, especially when they're boys.
True. But I will say, believe it or not, you know who was good at mounting very intimate shows despite the overblown quality of her designs was Georgina Chapman from Marquesa.
Yes, yes.
They had classic atelier style shows where you were in rooms, small, not very large rooms, and the clothes would walk from room to room.
She would only have two rows of chairs, and then you could see the clothes. I mean, the clothes would literally, touch you.
You could literally reach out and touch them. You weren't allowed to, but you could have just leaned forward and touched them.
Or the gal would touch your feet because they were so close to you. Those were my favorite.
And I don't even like I didn't like Marquesa all that much. I didn't find their aesthetic to be very sophisticated. But I was always struck by how sophisticated their presentations and runway shows were.
I remember
were.
Nautica with all the, gorgeous models and beautiful clothes, or Alice and Olivia also. They all had great presentations.
Alice and Olivia, they had great presentations.
They would create this background, and it was like a bookstore or anything. And they were just beautiful.
Yeah.
Those were my favorite.
Yeah.
In terms of meeting celebrities and the craziness and everything else, yes, of course, the runway shows. because they're like, as you said, they're shows. They're right. like, you know, these incredible things happening for like 20 minutes. Not 20, 12 minutes. But yeah, so I do hope things change a little. I think they're being forced to change things. I've been reading a lot of interviews with designers, and whatever's going on right now is making them rethink their process and as I said, be more creative, be more intimate. And I think that everyone will benefit from that.
Agreed. Final thoughts this week are on the Academy Awards.
Yes, the Academy
released new guidelines for Best Picture eligibility in an attempt to combat the lack of diversity among its nominees and among its winners. This mm-hmm. has been obviously an issue for most of Hollywood's history, but it's really become an important issue in the last decade or so with the Oscars So White campaign and just all the outcry over several of the winners over the last several years, the lack of Black or other nominees of color. So, but, you know, when they first released these guidelines, I was like, okay, why do I not feel good about any of this? So let me just run down real quick. There's a list of guidelines that they have to. Okay, so let's start with Standard A, on-screen representation, themes, and narratives. To achieve Standard A, the film must meet one of the following criteria. One, at least one of the lead actors or significant supporting actors, I don't know what significant supporting actor means, is from an underrepresented racial or ethnic group. Or two, at least 30% of all actors in secondary and minor roles are from at least two of the following underrepresented groups. And they're listed. And it's things like women, various racial ethnic groups, LGBTQ, people with cognitive or physical disabilities. Or the main storyline, theme, or narrative of the film is centered on an underrepresented group. So that right there, it's dictating a certain level of content, a certain type of content mm-hmm. in order to be eligible for Best Picture.
Meet the guidelines. Yeah.
Okay, so right there, I'm like, oh, okay. Then there's Standard B, creative leadership and project team. So there's Standard A, which deals with what the film is actually depicting. And Standard B is who is behind the film. Uh-huh. So to achieve Standard B, the film must meet one of the criteria below. At least two of the creative leadership positions or department heads should be from the following underrepresented groups. And it's women, racial, ethnic groups, LGBTQ, physical or cognitive disabilities. The second one is at least six other crew members must belong to, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then the third one is at least 30% of the film crew is from the following. So it's all racial, ethnic, minority guidelines, basically. It's basically minority hiring standards, equal opportunity hiring. And that's obviously I'm not opposed to that. I think that's a good thing. But it's then we get into Standard C. There's Standard A, Standard B, Standard C. Industry access and opportunities. To achieve Standard C, the film must meet both criteria below. The film paid apprenticeship and internship opportunities that should be open to all the groups that I've mentioned, and training opportunities, again, over for all of the groups that have been mentioned. Mm-hmm. And then there's Standard D, representation in marketing, publicity, and distribution. The point being, there's all these different standards. You can pick and choose from the menu which ones you need to fulfill in order to be eligible for a Best Picture nomination. Now, this is only to be eligible for a Best Picture nomination. Filmmakers are free to make whatever, and studios are free to greenlight whatever they want. And they could just, you know, cast it or hire and not worry about diversity in their hiring, and then just write off the idea, well, we're not going for Best Picture anyway, so we don't have to do that. Which, right there tells you how toothless this is, because there's really only a handful of films every year who's really gunning for a Best Picture nomination before they've even shot a second of the film, you know? So, I mean, like, your average Marvel film, your average horror film, your average big budget action film, none of them are operating under the assumption that they're eligible for Best Picture Oscars. So absolutely none of those are going to even concern themselves with this. What it gets into is it allows people to game the system. If you are interested in getting a Best Picture nomination for your picture, but your picture's all about white people in the Midwest and the director's white and the screenwriter's white and whatever, well, then you just have to hire some black intern or some gay person in the marketing department, or make sure there's X amount of women, in low-level crew positions, all of which is easily... Most films in Hollywood check those boxes off.
Right, right. I agree. When you think about it for a second, it's interesting and you kind of applaud it. But then when you start reading all the guidelines and everything,
wait a minute.
It's just, there's no way they can achieve that. And then at the same time, as you said, they're going to game the system in a way that they're going to know exactly what to do to get away with it.
Make sure we have a gay guy in marketing, we're up for Best Picture,
That type of stuff, yeah. Or, when it comes to the lead actor, the friend now, more than ever, is going to be an Asian person or a black person or a gay person.
Right. It's just, it really promotes tokenism as a solution to lack of diversity. We're just going to check off some boxes on our crew and shove... any person of color or a gay person in some of the background scenes, and we're up for Best Picture. And like I said, as Mark Harris, who is a writer, he writes for Vulture and he writes for Vanity Fair, and he's an expert. He writes on films.
Right.
He's an author as well.
He's very good.
And he wrote about this. He wrote a thread on Twitter the other day, basically he's basically an expert on the Oscars. And he basically picked it apart, largely saying what we're saying here, which is that it promotes tokenism. The vast majority of Hollywood films have no interest in gaining a Best Picture nomination, which means they have no interest in following these rules. It's just not, it's so clearly not going to lead to any significant change. And as he put it, it allows all the major studios it gets them off the hook, because all of the major studios have minorities in their marketing department, and they can always make sure there's a woman or a gay person on their crew and feel like they have satisfied stuff. Smaller indie pictures are going to have a harder time meeting these criteria. And those are the ones that really, really set out to get Oscar nominations, those prestige films.
Right.
Yes, prestige films should cast, even if they're small and indie, they should cast, people of color. They should have minority people in high-level positions all over the production. But it's going to force those smaller films to scramble to find ways to fill those positions in a way that every major studio film will not have to lift a finger to do.
Right.
So it's putting all of the work of change on the smallest possible, people in the job. And all of the biggest people, all of the biggest films will not be affected by this at all.
And the problem with this is, as you know, with major studios, once they meet the guidelines, the rules and regulations, they're not going to do anything beyond that. They're just not going to do it. They're just not going to try harder.
Right.
Because they did what they were supposed to do. So they're happy with it.
Yeah. And as Mark Harris said on his Twitter thread, he only said this in passing, but I was like, that's really true, that the Academy is now setting itself up to be some sort of employment regulatory agency, which is not its role. It never was its role, and it's not equipped to fulfill that role. So everything about it pissed off the types of people who get pissed off at diversity initiatives.
Right.
So it pissed off all these people who think, now you can't make a film unless it's starring black people or whatever.
You're telling people how to be creative.
It's also going to wind up pissing off the people for whom diversity really is an important aspect of filmmaking, because it's not going to lead to any change. It's just letting the most powerful people off the hook while giving the appearance of seeking change.
Right.
So it was basically a PR move. That's all. I know a lot of people have been talking about it this week, and I didn't love it when I first read it, and I couldn't put my finger on why, and I really didn't want to believe that I was against diversity initiatives. I'm not. But I realized after doing some reading that this is a particularly toothless one. And it all it is to give the appearance of change where there is none.
I agree.
So yeah, we're not going to see a bunch of diverse Oscar nominees because of this. Not at all. We're going to see the exact same types of Oscar nominees that we've seen in the past. And it's promoting tokenism in a way. It's codifying tokenism, which, you know, Halle Berry gave a rather explosive interview. This I kind of love Halle Berry. She's in her 50s. She doesn't give a shit. And she's saying stuff that she didn't used to say. And she talked about how tainted her Oscar win is and how it doesn't bring her much joy to think about it because she thought she was leading a change. And she's even said in her Oscar speech, this isn't about me, it's much bigger than me. And it turned out not to be true. No black woman has won a Best Actress Oscar in the 20 years since she won
hers.
I felt bad for her. I was like, wow, that was such a triumphant moment for you, and it's ashes in your mouth at this point.
I agree. It's kind of like the fashion industry approach to race. We're going to have a whole issue dedicated to all, you know, black models. Black models on a cover, the whole issue.
Right.
Yay!
This month.
And then we're going back to...
Skinny white girl.
Yes, that's pretty much it. So you have a year where the Oscars, everyone, all these African-Americans, Asians get all nominated and then they get awards. And okay, we did it. We're good.
We're done for 20
years.
We're
done for another 20 years. That's what happens. That's not causing or breaking or making any change.
When it comes to any diversity initiative in pop culture, whether it's fashion, magazines, television, or film, I guess the point I'm trying to make here is that work never ends. There is no, no ruling from down high that's going to fix things. It is constant vigilance constantly complaining, constantly protesting. Yes. And constantly asking for more.
Listen, as a gay person, the fight never ends.
It never ends.
I can speak as a gay person. I can't speak as an African-American or an Asian person, but I can speak as a gay person. It never ends.
Yep.
You have to keep fighting because things change.
Yep.
They go up and down. I mean, we've seen that.
Yep. All right. Well, that's us telling you how to live your lives once again.
I know.
Kittens, thank you for listening to our cartoon voices rambling about whatever passed our desk this week. We will be back next week to ramble about new things that passed our desks in the meantime. Until then, take care of yourselves. Be safe. Love you. Mean it. Bye-bye.